Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Happy holidays and happy pre-New Year, baby. We've only got a few more days of 2015 left, so hope you enjoy them and make the most of them. You know, get those resolutions set. I'm going to, again, make the resolution I made when I was in the fifth grade, which was try to read more. Although I don't think Pizza Hut still has their Reader's Club. There's this thing that Pizza Hut did back in the day where it was like, if you read a certain amount of books, you get a free pizza. And of course, former fat kid, I was all about that incentive. I was like, you mean I can get pizza for just reading words? That was how I fat kid talk. Anyway, thank you so much, you guys, for listening to the podcast up until this point. I really don't know how else to say it, but Brad and I love what we do. We love that you guys love what we do. We've gotten to have some amazing guests on over this past year, from Melissa McCarthy to Jerry Ferrara to Howie Mandel to Bob Saget to Kevin Nealon to Dana Carvey to Tony Danza. It's been an unbelievable year, and we can't thank you guys enough for subscribing on iTunes and giving us those 5-star ratings and commenting on the iTunes page, which you should do right now during the intro because it takes 2 seconds. And it helps us climb the charts and continue to bring you guys great content. This episode, it's volume 2 of the About Last Night Best Of. The first one you guys loved so much, and it was really fun to put together and listen to, because the way people listen to the podcast is different. Some people listen every Monday. Some people let them kind of build up, and then they kind of binge listen. Some people listen later in the week after the episode comes out. So it's fun to really go back and listen to so many great moments and so many great guests we've had on. The first one was a hit, so we've got Volume 2, Best of ALN Volume 2, baby. From Peter Sagal to Jerry Ferrara to Joey McIntyre to Ryan Sickler to Eric Griffin and Quick Fat. This one is jam-packed with a lot of hilarity. So enjoy it so much, and have a happy new year, man. The next time I talk to you guys, it'll be 2016. Enjoy the rest of your holiday break. And get ready for 2016, because Brad and I just spoke yesterday about the guests that we have confirmed for January, and holy shit, it's going to be, every week's going to be pretty spectacular for a couple months here, entering 2016. We're going big, baby. You gotta jump into the new year big, so we're not wasting any time with that. Of course, follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. This weekend, Brad will be in Charlotte, North Carolina, December 31st through January 2nd at the Comedy Zone in Charlotte, North Carolina. Go see Brad there, December 31st through January 2nd at the Comedy Zone in Charlotte, North Carolina. I will be in St. Louis at the Funny Bone, January 7th through the 10th. That's my next gig coming up. January 7th through the 10th, St. Louis Funny Bone. Get your tickets at funnybone.com. And then, of course, I'll be back in L.A. on January 5th, and I'll be doing shows all around town in January. So check AdamRayTV.com for all those details. And, of course, before the new year starts, you guys got a few more days to lock in and stack up your ALN merch, baby. Hats are here! About Last Night podcast hats. I don't know if you've been to Astoy merchandise recently. Go right now, baby. We got some dope-ass hats up. I mean, these things are fucking. They're snapback. We got the logo on the front. It's as cool as it gets. Go to estoymerchandise.com. Get your ALN hats, your mugs, your Ronin the Quave shirts, your Life My Life shirts. A lot of great gift ideas still there. And post-Christmas spending can still occur. And also get your merch for the new year, because Brad and I are both filling up that calendar, and we're going to be on the road quite a bit. I've got a new TBS show that I do with Eliza Schlesinger called Separation Anxiety, coming out on TBS in March, and I'm going to be hitting the road a lot, so I want you guys to come out and see it and bring your merch, because we'll sign it. Anyway, I think that's all the merch info. That's all the Twitter handles. Those are the tour dates, so now sit back, relax, and enjoy a very special Volume 2 Best Of About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's About Last Night.
Best of moment number 27. The director of The Nutty Professor, 51st Dates, Get Smart, Tommy Boy. It's the amazing Peter Seagal sharing an incredible story about working on The Nutty Professor with Eddie Murphy. The makeup process for Nutty Professor. How much did you oversee?
Rick Baker won an Academy Award for the first movie. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize, you know, how complicated it was. It was 6 hours of makeup every day for Eddie, and to get into makeup, then it's about 2 or 3 hours to get out.
Yeah.
And so I felt horrible that he would be the last guy off the lot after our crew had packed up the trucks.
Wow.
The makeup trailer light was still on, so I felt like I couldn't let him be the last guy off. So I would always go in at the end of the day and talk to him. And then Rick Baker would always be pissed at me because if you're talking, it's hard to get the glue off the face.
Yeah.
So I said, Pete, can you just shut the fuck up so we can go home?
He just needs to sit here.
So I learned to, you know, talk and then let them do what they had to do. But I just, you know, and it was great just hanging out for hours.
He probably really appreciated it. I'm sure that.
Well, I think so. And then the other thing that was really cool is we'd have what we call Friday night videos where I would, you know, and it's scary because you never know, is the actor going to like the stuff you're doing during the shoot? And that was the longest shoot. That was a 96-day shoot of all the characters.
Yeah, and you have a total of 8 to 9 hours of makeup every day.
And very little time shooting.
Right. You shoot, right? I mean, would you have other actors in the seats for the other
There were
relatives?
Tennis balls for the other actors, and then I did the voices of the other. Now, by the way, that's a frightening thing.
Yeah.
Me, the white Jew, you know, doing impressions of all of Eddie's.
Please, somebody, don't buy those rights. I want to do that Broadway musical at some point.
Me, the white Jew. And so, because in the first movie, Eddie had an earpiece, and he would hear all of these actors in the soundproof booth giving all the other lines so he could talk and overlap those characters. He said he didn't like wearing the earpiece anymore, so he said, you know, I thought, well, then what? I guess it's
I need
just
a Jew
me.
To feed me the lines.
Jew. He was just pointing to me, but I said, I thought he was meant a Jew. Yeah. So I started doing it, but, you know, it's like I started, you know, being Granny Clump, Sherman, and then having to play Mama. Oh, my baby.
Oh, Jesus.
I would have to.
I feel like he stole your voices.
Well, the first time I did it, it was like a very long pause. My life slowed down.
God.
And I looked up at him and I thought, is this going to be good? And he looked at me and he just went, okay. And then we kept going. And I thought,
that's
I'm in.
Oh, man. Jesus.
And so, you know.
That's incredible. And then So he's just got to do that one part. And you're reading.
I'm reading. So the dinner table scene in the restaurant, there were six characters, so it took 6 days.
Jeez.
For a
one
four-minute
character
scene.
A day. Yeah.
One
By the way, I don't, I mean, I feel the same way about how I do with Jim Carrey and like Liar Liar or Jim Carrey and The Grinch and Eddie and Nutty Professor. I feel like those guys, and only maybe those, I feel like those guys only could do those parts.
Yeah.
You know, Robin Williams maybe could have done Liar Liar, but like physically what Jim Carrey does in that is, you know, beating himself up in that courtroom, like nobody could do that.
Yeah.
And with Eddie with this, and I feel like I am also just such a love people that do multiple characters like that. And it's why I loved Martin growing up. And like, I feel like he should have been considered for an Academy Award for that.
Yes.
Is that crazy to say?
No, he should have.
It's mind blowing. I mean, every person is a real different person.
Yeah.
And it's, you're never did I be like, oh, yeah, there's a, yeah, so he was, that's a character that time.
Mm-hmm. No, he's like no one else. And, you know, there's a guy who will take what's on the page and it will change. You know, he will improvise a lot. Some guys, not so much.
Yeah.
Eddie, a lot. And it's, you know, he will, I think, surprise himself at times and just start cracking up with the stuff he comes up with. And it's just, that is amazing to watch.
With it,
him working.
And then that's got to be crazy. I mean, because now if he's improvising a bunch as Mama to the grandma, now you got, I mean, you
Well, we would write down the improvs. The script supervisor had like the toughest job on there.
Because
she's writing down all the ad-libs from yesterday's performance and the day before and the day before. So by the time you're at day six of a six-character scene, you've got six extra days of improv. So your script for what started out as a 4-page, 4-minute scene is now like 20 pages long.
Holy crap.
But you might as well do all the improvs for everything. But now that's me pointing at the tennis balls, doing 20 pages of his improv that are now I'm reading the script, and then trying not to step on his lines so I don't overlap him.
That's, to me, seems like one of the biggest obstacles is not overstepping. Yeah. Like, and letting him, I mean, it's like you basically had to develop comedic rapport with a legend.
Yeah.
And let him do what he's going to do and not limit him without any, you guys never had any scene study classes together.
No.
There was
no,
you played a couple of video games.
No, that was, that was the coolest thing. And if you asked me during pre-production how I was going to do it, I would have no answer. Because we had to make that up. Because I thought I was going to have the earpieces, and all these other actors were standing by.
Right.
Nope.
And you just
isn't that crazy that Eddie Murphy trusted you to help him give those performances?
Well, I'm not sure he trusted me at first. He just didn't want to do it a certain way, and I guess the trust was figure it out. You know, and
but like
so
he couldn't have
liked it out.
He could have not liked the way you were doing.
Oh yeah,
you know, you could have been stepping on. You could have been nervous. I mean, you
could have gone totally horribly wrong. But
I feel like that's a really amazing skill set to just. And I don't know if you innately have always had this, but just and maybe you picked this up from the Tommy Boy. Like we got to figure it out that you weren't scared of anything. But like if Eddie Murphy to me was like that would be in my head to be like don't fuck this up. But you were just like all right, he wants me to do it. I'm going to do it and not think twice about it.
Well, and then I'll say that I took that to my last film that I did, Grudge Match, and you know, again, it was amazing working with both Stallone and De Niro. But Bob really likes to rehearse a lot, and so the way I interacted with Eddie on that set carried over here because Bob would say, "Pete, just run the lines with me," and I'd start running the lines. Let's do it again. And let's do it again. And then I'd tell the crew, you know, take five because he just wants to keep running. Then I realized I'm running lines
Robert
De Niro.
Step outside yourself.
Yeah. If you took 2 seconds to think about that, you wouldn't know how to answer
it. Stallone's in the background. Who took my cherry Slurpee? And you're like, all right, man, we're running lines. Easy with the Slurpee talk.
That's the kind of moment where you say, This is a life moment.
Yeah. Now, who do you share these stories with? Wife when you get home?
You right now. Yeah. The only person who cares.
Best of moment number 28. The Weasel. Pauly Shore.
The main room stage, you know, my mom didn't own. You know, it was like that was like Ciro's. And then she was in a dispute with this guy, Art LeBeau, who owned the property of it. And then they broke down the wall and they bought the main room and stuff. And that room was like there used to be the Comedy Store Players.
Right.
There was an improv group and it was a big improv group. And there were some like really good comedians. And Monday nights were like the night here at the Comedy Store. Like a line used to pack out, like hundreds of people would pack out. Always. You know, it was free to get in. It was Monday night, so it was like the rock and roll night. And they used to open with... I would go on first with my band. I had a band.
Called.
And we were called We Don't Know Yet, because we never knew the name.
Name.
We never knew the
name. Yeah, well...
We don't know
what's the name of your band? We don't know yet. Perfect.
And then I used to play drums, and then Smokey Robinson's kid, Barry Robinson, he used to play bass, and I had this kid, Dean Zuckerman, who was the guitar player, who had like zits on his back and like a 9-inch cock. It was so weird.
Please tell me that's what you were looking for when you were looking for a bassist.
I swear to God, this guy was like, he like could kill
the Beatles. Huge cock, zitty back.
Dude, he could kill the Beatles. Like just fucking, yeah, just so good. And we're talking like fifth, sixth grade. Like amazing. Like amazing. And I used to swear to God, I used to charge kids to see his dick. Like for sure, but...
Like why not the zitty back?
Yeah.
No, that's not as interesting as a 9-inch cock.
Now, how much would you charge?
That's like $1, you know what I mean, to glance at it.
Typical mini Kit Kats.
But like, he was in fifth grade, and he had like pubes and the whole thing.
Jesus.
Like, for real, yeah.
So you were like P.T. Barnum of cocks.
Pretty much. In fifth grade, I was making money. I was wheeling, dealing. You know what I mean? A lot of like guys were like throwing dice and, you know.
Yeah, some kids had like a paper
drugs.
Route.
Yeah, and... I'm like, who wants to see Dean's dick? All right, gather. People be like, holy shit, it's huge.
Oh, man.
You know?
You weren't kidding.
So we used to go up. My band, we used to go up. And then after would be the Comedy Store Players. And that's with Robin Williams and Jim Stahl and all these just kind of like, you know, all those pictures you see on the wall.
Yeah.
Like in the main room. And then after that, the comedy began. And that was like, you know, full on, like straight up, like all-star.
Best of moment number 29. It's our boy Turtle from Entourage. The amazing Jerry Ferrara.
No. I was just saying, like, when the kids start playing too rough, I get so uncomfortable when kids, like, are selfish with toys or get a little too physical. Yeah. I don't know how to handle it because I can't discipline. So I just got to be like, guys, play.
And they don't, and also they don't know, like, their own strength or, like, like I've seen my nieces, like one of them grabbing the other one, like the back of her head. And like, I'm like, oh shit. Like she's going to just shove it into the couch cushion. It's like, they don't know, or the hair pulling, but the running, it's so great to like, even how fired up he gets about like a foot race.
That's it.
And that's just like the prime example of how growing up and becoming an adult, like kind of sucks in a way, because little things like that, like you would never, if we were to go outside and race right now, one of us would be like, dude, I didn't stretch.
We'd have to have a fucking doctor.
Yeah, dude, it's like race. Like, what are we? And then you go, what are we, seven? And then it's like, now we're shitting on how great that age was.
Yeah.
I mean, snow to me is a prime example of that. Like, I was having this conversation the other day, and I was like, man, I wish it would snow, because I fucking hadn't, and, you know, not down here, but like when I go home to Seattle, it's like, yep. I haven't been home in it in a while. And I was like, you remember how. I mean, East Coast, did you love it?
Oh, yeah. It was the best. I had a profitable snow shoveling business.
Did you really?
Oh, my God. My
driveways?
Friends and I hired like 20 guys, 20 11-year-olds.
Holy
when
shit.
I was like 12. I made like $3,000 one winter.
What?
Yeah, dude, it was that one snowstorm. It might have been like 93.
Yeah.
The big snowstorm of 93. I cleaned up.
You were running like a damn union.
I bought Jordans. I bought Reebok pumps. I was swagged out for the next year of school.
Jesus.
Did you buy the starter jacket?
No, I did not.
You didn't have Nick's starter jacket?
I actually told this story on my podcast, and I had my mom on to talk about it. This is like the year before when starter jackets were at its height, and I wanted one, and my mom took me to the store to price them out, and they were like, what were they?
$150? They were pricey,
dude. Yeah.
Which my mom, single mom, she was like, Jerry, absolutely not. I cannot afford it. And I was so upset, but I also didn't want to make her feel like shit at a very young age. And it was like right around Christmas time. She went back, unbeknownst to me at the time, and put it on layaway, which I don't even know if they have layaway anymore, where she's paying like $30 a week for 7 weeks. And she got it for me, and then she left it at my aunt's house, so I didn't find it, in a closet where there was like I guess you call it like a nightlight or something in the closet, and actually the star jacket leaned up against it, burnt a hole through the bottom of the star jacket.
Shit.
It was a San Jose Shark one. I think she screwed it up. Yeah. I wanted the Ranger one. She got me the Sharks one. And the Sharks just came out. That logo was brand new.
Yeah. You kind of on the same realm. Like, I remember I asked for a starter jacket for Christmas, and I was like, oh my God, Mom, gotta have a starter jacket. And then got one. It was a Ducks jacket, which I'm a hockey fan, but kind of wanted the Laker jacket.
Yeah.
And then but I'm like, you know what? Ducks jacket, starter, cool.
Yeah.
So I put the starter jacket on, go to school. Oh, I got made fun of.
For the Ducks.
Like,
the mighty Ducks. Quack.
Yeah, quack, bitch. What, you going to do a flying V into the third grade, you son of... Like, wow. Oh, my God.
I do remember, if you were rocking a Raider jacket, like, you were saying something. You were essentially saying, I'll beat the shit out of you.
Right. Yeah,
I was scared of those kids. I get to have the kickball. I get to start with the kickball. Like, don't fucking... like, I steal your lunch money. Yeah, you're making big statements with that. That's amazing that you start a bit. Like, how do you have the wherewithal to go, oh, there's a lot of snow. People probably want it shoveled and can't do it themselves or don't want to do it. So I'll hire 11-year-olds and start a gang of fucking snow shovelers.
It was, you know, I always had to go shovel my grandparents' cars.
So you're doing
out
it anyway.
So yeah, I was doing it anyway, and I remember, like, I always do it. My grandfather would like throw me $20 and be like, thanks a lot or whatever. And then I feel like I was like on my way back, and I saw like another kid whose parent was making him do it. And I started talking to him in the neighborhood, and I was
This is how the movie starts, by the way.
This is exactly how it starts. And the next thing you know, we literally had a group of like 11-year-olds that I think we were like 60-40 in our favor too. We were taking the money.
You were like the sandlot of snow shovelers.
It was kind of cutthroat. I was real cutthroat about it too.
You were the Benny the Jet Rodriguez of snow shovelers.
And I remember like the minimum was like 20, but like stairs were 20.
Yeah.
Cars were 10.
Nice.
And I want to say, if you had like a whole driveway, whole package, 50. And one of the kids even got shorted. I remember like ringing a bell. I'm 12 years old and telling like an adult, like, you fucking shorted us. And you know what? We're going to take everybody's snow and we're going to put it on your fucking steps.
Oh, you're a damn.
And I'm going to water it. So it turns into a sheet of ice.
You're a damn mob
boss. I'm a Teamster.
Dude, that's
holy
unbelievable.
Shit. Yeah, I mean,
what a great business that was.
I was about to ask if he ever broke any legs as a joke, but now I'm kind of scared.
Yeah, just wet down the steps. There you go. Merry Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Home Alone style.
Oh, God.
The
with the podcast, by the way, Bad for Business.
Yes, Bad for Business,
awesome.
Which has been a lot of fun. And look, inspired by a lot of like Burr and you guys and just listening and just being a fan of sports talk and just talk radio my whole life. So
you're a natural, dude. I've listened to almost all of them and you're great. It's because you got to be a likable host and you got to know how to like carry the show, which, and you know, you're only going to get like better at it. Because like
I hope so. We're banking on it.
Dude, you are, man. Because when we start, dude, we feel like we got a good rhythm now, but like figuring out the give and take between guests and yourself and
when to talk, when to shut up,
dude,
when to
just
move on.
Shut up, Brad. But it, no, but it's, you figure that out as you go, just like anything.
Yeah.
But you're, and obviously you've got great people at your disposal. Like the shit with Doug and Connolly and my favorite and crush, Mishriki.
She was awesome, man.
Emmanuel
Shriki. Dude, she crushed it. Yeah. She, for me, is like,
Adam has, all right, he's going to downplay it. Adam
that's your girl?
Totally.
Yeah, just hearing her,
like,
even don't ever say anything bad about the girl in front of Adam. He'll
defend one of your best friends, right?
Yeah, she's literally and every time I say, so we actually, this is what we discussed on the show. I say, she's like my sister. They're like, she won't bang you, huh? I'm like, no, I swear to God, I am not, she's family. I'm like, right, we get it. You just can't get it.
Friend zone can't close.
Yeah, way to go.
That was a great. Yeah.
Our whole episode was about the friend zone because everyone thinks we're all in the friend zone.
It's
with
such
her.
A
like,
bummer too
trying.
When you see a girl like that that's just like breathtaking, and then you're like. You're like, please don't be just like super dope. And then I listen to that episode. I'm like, God, man.
She's
like,
dope, bro. I could,
Man, it sounds like she burns a little every now and then.
She's dope.
Oh, God.
There you go. Well,
I'll try. Look, I'm sure she's going to have something to promote in the relative near future. Maybe she's a guest.
Dude,
maybe she's sitting in this very chair looking at your trophy.
I mean, I would never wash that chair like I washed it before, but.
Right. You scrubbed it before I came in, right?
Right. That would be me talking to her and we're going, Adam, you have anything to comment? Okay. All right. Thanks, Adam.
Is it hot in here? Yeah. I know it's the dead of winter, but fuck.
I got third place trophy over here. I don't know if you want to see that. I don't know if you ever had fantasies about guys in the Canadian Basketball League.
Triple the amount of candles. Because there's I'm counting
wrong.
Like there's like three or four. I'm picturing Shrieky comes in here.
All
there's,
candles.
There's a baker's dozen.
Adam, why are you doing the podcast tonight in a loincloth? No reason.
No reason, man. Can you stop doing push-ups and come join the conversation?
Dude, how'd you tie a double Windsor knot for the show? Wow. I got a dinner after this. It was a function.
Yeah. What? I always do a podcast in a suit.
Yeah.
You guys don't?
Oh, you're the asshole.
Yeah, classic.
The podcast drops every what?
I mean, we don't have a set day. It's usually Thursday or Friday, or usually because like at some point it always gets erased and we have to figure out where it went.
Yeah.
And do all that sort of troubleshooting.
Been
so
there.
Everyone who's done a podcast at some point lost an episode.
Yeah. Oh,
there's always a lost file.
Best of moment number 30 from the New Kids on the Block in the movie The Heat. And the CBS show McCarthy's, the amazing and beautiful sounding Joey McIntyre.
We don't even know what we are giving back. Don't even say I love you no more.
Let Joey get in here, buddy.
Oh, you got the lyrics.
Yeah.
Cause saying I would feel is no love.
Okay, I got this.
Take it, Joey.
Some people work things out and some just don't know how to change. Let's do it till the water runs dry.
Are we singing harmony or are we just going to go?
We do much, our whole lives pass us by.
Pass us by, baby.
Let's do it till the water runs dry. We'll make the biggest mistake of our lives. Don't do it, baby.
Ooh. There he is.
Yeah.
Shut up, Adam. We got Joey here.
Oh, yeah.
Joey,
you got this. You got this.
Keep going. Oh. Yeah. Oh, shit.
I can see the tears in our eyes.
I thought we were just going to fade out.
Now, here
right
we go.
There.
But with another pain that lies deep in our heart. Maybe there's a pain we can
that I just tore with these guys.
Yeah. Song. Here we go. You got this.
Torn apart. Why do we hate each other? Why do we push?
Okay, here we go. Okay. Oh, you suck, man.
Let's not wait till the water runs dry.
No, baby.
We might watch our lives pass us by.
We might watch our lives.
Don't wait to.
I could have sang this all summer with fucking Boyz II Men. Instead, I'm sitting here.
But now you're doing it with Mr. Adam
with
Ray.
You.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Hey, that was incredible.
I thought we finished.
After Don't Lick the Sledgehammer?
Excuse me. We started strong.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we came out of the gates firing.
No, that's the thing about licking the sledgehammer. It's like, just don't lick the sledgehammer.
That might be the best thing I've ever heard. Here's the thing about licking the sledgehammer. Don't lick the sledgehammer.
Just don't do it.
Best of moment number 31 from Girl Code, Chelsea Lately. And at midnight, it's the sweet, sexy, and funny Jessamé Peluso.
I was always class clown, like, every year.
Sure.
I didn't know what that meant. I was just like, oh, okay, well, I'm just me.
But
I don't
nobody
know.
Else was. But there's never, like, five class clowns, though. And even if there are, it's I feel like you kind of seed it out. Like, even at that age, like, you're, like...
The one funny?
Yeah, like, there's some, like, somebody, maybe, like one of the guys who thinks he's the class clown is the guy who, like, swaps out the water cooler for scalding hot water.
Right.
So that it burns people's lips.
Right. Right.
How classic was that? It's like, dude, you're a dick.
You're a dick.
Yeah,
you're the dick
clown.
Just being
an asshole.
You're the dick clown.
But, there's always the one guy and girl, normally, like, in the high school where whenever there's a school assembly, like, even the teachers come up to them and go, can you make our... announcement funny.
Sure.
Can you come like do this kind of thing?
Yeah.
Were you that? Was that you?
Totally.
That's awesome.
I've done they have like in the morning on the speaker.
Yeah, I did morning announcements.
Yeah,
wait, I did morning announcements.
Too. I did that too.
We all did it.
Wow.
Good.
So great.
Morning, Sunny Hills.
Oh my
that was me. Sunny Hills High School, the
That's
high school
amazing.
That sounds like a retirement home.
Oh my God. It does.
Right.
Please
Sunny
tell
Hills?
Me you would make references to that.
Oh,
today we're serving
absolutely.
Applesauce again. Remember to take your pills, Ethel.
Change your bedpans, everybody. Coming through to change your bedpans.
Yeah. I mean, like, because I did it with a partner, my best buddy Ozzy, who I'm still friends with to this day.
Sure.
And we did, like, yeah, you've met Ozzy.
Yeah.
We do like a whole Laurel and Hardy, like, routine. We do announcements. I was the crazy one. He was a straight guy. You're like, Brad, calm down. The sloppy joes aren't that bad. They're insane, Ozzy.
Oh my God. You guys were shitty morning radio before
we were
you
shitty,
even got to do it.
Hey,
little
what's
did you
up?
Know you would be
what's up everyone? Let's welcome to the Sunny Hills Morning Zoo.
Wah, wah.
What's happening here?
Boy, that was a loud duck or whatever.
What animal was that?
Her face right now trying to figure out you were almost crying.
What a panda?
By the way, we just experienced my favorite Adam Ray-ism, and that's when he really starts laughing. He goes really high. What the fuck was that?
I know.
Oh my God, it's so funny.
I know, I do.
Now he's like trying to be manly and low.
I don't do that at all.
Really funny. See, I have to break Adam down right now because of my hair. I'm
Why?
Feeling very insecure about
Why?
It.
I think it looks cool.
Well, but see, this
is
a normal.
A
do you really like it?
Yeah, I do. I think it's cool.
I also dig it. That's why I said I think you got to leave it. Here's Brad is in an Eminem tribute band.
Shut up.
It's called Mini M&M's.
Brad did a handstand in a bucket of Clorox.
So quick.
Yeah.
So for Halloween, if our viewers, obviously you can't see this shit, Brad's, the top of his head is blonde and his sides are not blonde. They're brown.
And the reason I did it.
You were Eminem
for No,
I was something way better.
Brad was Miley Cyrus,
Miley Cyrus
in the wrecking ball.
Clint hair.
So funny. Yo, by the way, tweet at Brad Miley Cyrus's clit hair. Hashtag. That's a long hashtag. If you can shorten it.
Yeah, if you can figure it out.
If you can figure it out.
So what I did.
The picture.
Because there was tons of people going as Miley Cyrus.
My cousin did.
Yeah, but they
how
all.
Was your cousin?
But they all went.
She looked just like her.
No shit. Wait, how old is she though?
29.
Okay, that's fine.
But they all went from the VMA performance, Miley Cyrus. I did Wrecking Ball, Miley Cyrus.
Oh.
I wish I was taking a picture of Jessie May's face.
Thighs.
Yeah, baby.
Oh, the dude's got a lower half.
Oh, my God.
Dwarf thighs. So, yeah, a blonde hair.
That, and you have a wrecking ball hanging from your ball.
I have an absolute.
That's like
yeah.
what they do in an Amazonian tribe. That's like a traditional.
That's like Viagra before Viagra. Yeah.
And by the way, I'm holding that wrecking ball between my balls. I was doing Kegels for months.
Amen.
Training
Kegels.
For that. And that's me.
That's awesome.
If you want to see that picture of me as Miley Cyrus from the Wrecking Ball video, go to my Instagram at Brad Williams Comic.
You're going
to
want to
see that.
It.
Yeah.
Do you?
That's fun.
That's an amazing cut. Did you dress up?
I recycled a costume that I had.
Nothing wrong with that.
I was I took a Wonder Woman costume and kind of cut it up and made it Blonder Woman. Real creative. I traded out the W for a B.
I'm a fan of that.
I put like a leopard print B on there.
Nice.
And then a B on my butt.
Sure.
And then everyone just thought I was Booty Girl. And I was like, okay.
Is that a character?
I don't know.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Is Booty Girl a new superhero? It fucking saves rap videos.
Oh, my
God. This song sucks. Cut to a Booty Girl.
Lil Wayne is making a new video and it sucks. Call Booty Girl.
I just go in and just bounce my little Asian boy ass.
Perfect. It's not little Asian boy.
Best of moment number 32. He tells us how he got SNL. It's an amazing story. The one and only Kevin Nealon.
No, the Saturday Night Live thing. Okay, here's what happened.
Yeah.
I was not even pursuing that job because I was a stand-up. You know, I wasn't a sketch artist or an impressionist characters. But Dana Carvey was up for the show at the time, and we shared a house when he was in town. He would rent a studio apartment over the garage in this house we lived in the Hollywood Hills.
That's
it was
awesome.
Me, another comic, Bob Duback, and Joe Kenny, a writer friend of mine. And Dana would be around a lot. And so I knew him from stand-up comedy, you know, over the years. And we used to kind of be in the driveway, and we'd do characters kind of stuff, you know, just riff off each other. And he got the show that summer, and he was going to be moving to New York, you know, later in the summer. And then Jan Hooks was also up for the show at the time. And at the time I was dating her, we had been friends for a long time, too. And I was reading Backstage Live, Saturday Night Live, and I was excited for them. I was really excited and wondering how it was all going to turn out.
And you've been a fan of the show at that point.
Yeah. I love the show, and no idea that I would ever come into play on it.
Jeez.
And so Dana goes to New York, and he calls me one day. He's in, he says, Kev, I'm out at Lorne Michaels' house in Amagansett. I'm in the back bedroom. Guess who's in the kitchen? It's Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd.
No kidding.
Anyway, I told Lauren about you. I think they're going to want to see your tapes because they're looking for one more cast member.
Oh,
my God. I said, you're kidding me. Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd are in the kitchen?
yeah, that's what you heard.
What are they eating? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't think anything of it. I'll never get on there. You know, it's a nice gesture, but it's not going to happen for me. Because you couldn't get an audition if you didn't have like a powerful agent in L.A.
How did Danny get his?
He had a powerful agent.
There you go.
He was with Brad Grey at the time, manager. And so, and I always kind of wanted to be with Brad Grey as my manager.
Sure.
But he had his hands full at the time, he told me. So I sent my tape in. Week goes by. I get another call from Dana. I'm back out at Lorne Michaels' house. Guess who's out in the kitchen? It's Paul Simon and Steve Martin.
Whoa.
You're kidding me. Anyway, I think Lauren liked your tape. I think he's going to fly in. Steve Martin's in the kitchen.
Dude, I feel like those conversations just escalate to where he's like, the next week, it's like, guess who's in the kitchen? The cast of Fraggle Rock and, you know, Bill Clinton.
This is just like a Lifetime miniseries. Who's in Lauren Michaels' kitchen?
Yeah, yeah. Mahatma Gandhi. Gandhi's out in the kitchen. But anyway, so
he hasn't touched a thing.
So I think it's a waste of time, but I'll humor them, you know.
Put
I'm glad they like the tape. And
he liked the tape at this
they
point.
They liked the tape. And so they fly me in. And I think it's just going to be me and a couple other people because there's only one spot. But of course, you know, typical of Hollywood, it's the whole plane is full of people going to audition.
Jeez,
people from the Groundlings and Second City. Even the pilot came out of the cockpit. He goes, hey, you think this is funny for my audition? And so I
got this character. He's a pilot.
Yeah, he's a guy who doesn't fly planes and pitches characters while the plane's nosediving.
I go to 30 Rock, and I'm not nervous at all because I know I'm not getting it because I don't do characters or sketches.
It's a great, also really healthy mentality to have going in, right?
Oh, it was perfect. Yeah. It was perfect. And everyone else is pacing, and they're sweating, and they're nervous. And then I go into Studio 8H where they film the show, and I do my my little audition kind of off to the side. It was on the floor. I remember it wasn't on the stage. It was on the floor at the end of the bleachers, and they had a camera set up. And it was the people that were already on the show for that year. It was Nora Dunn, John Lovitz,
jeez,
Dennis Miller, Dana Carvey was there, and Lorne Michaels. And they're all sitting behind the camera, and they're watching. And I'm just doing my stand-up and a couple of things that Dana and I used to do in the driveway, you know, of our house. And I leave, and I think, oh, that was fun, you know?
Yeah, got to go to New York.
New York, yeah.
No characters. You just did some bits of you guys
I think so.
Talking through stuff? Like, this would be funny almost?
Yeah, I think we
No Hans and Franz?
No Hans and Franz. No, nothing. It was, I think we used to do a couple of characters, like porno characters.
Nice.
Like they would talk to each other when they're sitting in the director's chair getting made up. You know, it's just like in between scenes. Saying, hey, Johnny, we should go have pizza next week and go do some bowling. Oh, yeah. But make it nice for the, you know, we talked to the makeup artist about how she's putting the makeup on our, you know, on our package.
Yeah,
put some pinstripes on that. You know, make it nice for the people. It's always make it nice for the people.
For the people.
Yeah.
Yeah. You cared about your fans.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we'll get some pizza and we'll go down there and, yeah, put a little sparkle on the side too. Like, that's good.
That must have crushed, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were all laughing. The thing is, I think what Lorne, discovered that he needed people that could work well together, so they have to know each other. And mm-hmm. I knew Dana, I knew Dennis, and
did you know John Lovitz?
I didn't know John Lovitz, but we all had a chemistry, I think, and that's what
I
that's
think what he's funny, Lorne.
Jealous. So no, did you have the same type of nervous feelings you did at the Tonight Show when you walked out on that stage at Saturday Night Live?
Oh, not at all.
No.
Oh, you mean the first day? The first
for the audition?
Oh, for the audition. No, but the first night that we shot the show was actually, it's funny how you can kind of rationalize and make yourself relaxed. You think of different scenarios. Like for me, I thought nobody's really watching this show anymore, and they really weren't. The ratings were, it was almost canceled the yeah. season before we came in.
Was that like the Robert Downey Jr. Yeah. cast?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't his cast, but...
Right, it was the cast.
He was one of the cast members, yeah.
Yes. He came in there and said, this is my show now. Yeah. You don't even know this. I'm gonna be Iron Man one day.
Yeah. So great. I would tell myself, nobody's watching it. It's mm-hmm. probably just the people in the room. And I was used to people in a room because I did stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a small room in there. And there's a lot of cameras. And I remember waiting to go on. And we're coming back from commercial. This is my first sketch. It's Mr. Subliminal. Which is
that was
difficult.
Your first yeah. sketch?
Oh my God!
You got like two conversations going on at once.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is, I mean, iconic now, which is crazy to think about.
And so Lorne comes up next to me just before we're about to come back live, mm-hmm. like 5 seconds. The stage manager is counting down four, and Lorne goes to me. He goes, "Are you sure this is what you want?"
What? Before your first show?
Yeah.
God, he's so art of war. He's nuts.
I hear he does that too, where he'll kind of plant little seeds like that in people's heads to kind of give them a little mind.
Well, I think it's more of his sense of humor.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of...
So
does that make you panic?
So he can tell Chevy Chase in the kitchen one day, guess what I told Kevin Nealon 5 seconds before he was going on. Yeah. Are you sure this is what you want? Ah, it was hilarious.
By the way, you're now one of those guys in the kitchen, which is like pretty
That's
cool.
That's right.
Hey, there you go.
Good night, everybody.
take a break. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Danny Glover. That's okay. So you do the Subliminal sketch, and then it goes over great.
Yeah, it goes over well, and then we're on our way. You know, and the church lady was out there, and you know, it was just kind of the show was kind of reinventing itself again.
How long did it take for you and that cast to kind of feel like, oh, people aren't watching this to where you're like, I think
well,
we're crushing
that's a
it.
Good question. We were living out of our suitcase each week. We were expecting mm-hmm. the show to be canceled.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, you just, it's that's way the entertainment business, anyway, you really don't, you can't trust it. You never think it's going to be lasting, long lasting.
Well, I might just, you know, shut the laptop off any moment.
I know. Even with podcasts, you don't know if you're going to go the full hour.
Best of moment number 33. Hilarious comedian, Family Guy writer and producer, it's Kevin Biggins. The video of you meeting Adam West on YouTube is a great story about how he called you Calvin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was
But even though he knew your name.
Yes.
Like he totally got it.
Totally. But I mean, at some point he did. That's the thing. Like, I don't know when he decided he was going to make it a weird bit. But
And you were pumped to meet him.
Very much.
And so, and you were like...
And still am. Like, every time he comes in is hilarious.
And so he's... I mean, that is a genius casting.
He's very funny.
Because he's got some of the most...
Oh, God.
I mean, there's so many great moments per show, but sometimes he's only got, like, two.
Right.
And it's... You know, they stand out more.
Sure, yeah. Am I Bo Bice? Let's play 20 questions. That's my dad's favorite line of the show. Let's play 20 questions. Am I Bo Bice? Yes. My dad's like, that Bo Bice.
Is that from American Idol?
That was from Bo Bice from whatever, season three or something.
Some of those references.
We're getting good. This is a good reference
podcast. This is great, yeah.
Yeah, we're pretty solid.
wallet on him.
But he goes.
So you see the show.
Yeah.
Right? And then like, and that's edgy. That's awesome.
And, you know, that was 98. I was in college at Drake University.
Yeah.
Give them a shout out. Des Moines, Iowa.
I went to Keith Sweat University.
Oh, nice.
Also in the R&B school. Yeah. Of-
And look at us. We both they both were good filters into comedy.
Damn it. I only got
If you're a white guy out there aspiring to be a comedian, go to a school named after a...
Except for R. Kelly. Don't go there.
Thankfully, I got denied R. Kelly, but I got accepted to Brian McKnight.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Nice. Good safety
school. I was on the wait list for Montel Jordan University. It's hard. It's a tough school to get into.
That is tough.
And I go, you couldn't let me into these for a semester? They go, sorry, this is how we do it. And I go, all right, well... Oh, thanks, guys.
That was well crafted. I gotta say,
that was me. That was the coach hitting ground balls to the
that
to
was
the
a,
infield.
A wind. It was a windy road, but not that long, and it came back quick. Yeah. And I was like, hey, look at that.
Best of moment number 34. He stops by to tell us about his hilarious Indian mother. It's the one and only Raj Sharma.
But they just opened a Burger King in India. Does anybody know why that's funny?
Well, because they don't eat cow.
That's right.
Yeah.
So what the fuck do you sell at a Burger King when you can't...
Just fries?
I guess
chicken fries.
It's lamb. And that they've done in Mumbai, in the state of Maharashtra.
Like Burger King, have it your way, except for the burger.
Have it your way. Or our way. Burger King, have it our way, which is meatless. But in the state of Maharashtra, it's a ban on beef now. So they're trying to do this... throughout India.
Oh, man.
But now there's no beef. So when you go to Mumbai, you used to go to the Hard Rock, and I mean, it's jam-packed full of Hindus eating bacon cheeseburgers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because it would just secretly go...
They would be like the rebel ones.
Yeah, I mean, but if you saw somebody else eating one, and you were too, you're not ratting that guy out.
No.
So it was like a code. Like,
so,
so
it's like running into your guidance counselor at a strip club or
that's
something?
That's exactly right. Or like your principal.
I'll say anything if you want.
Yeah. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Let's talk about this on Monday.
How my mom found out that I eat beef...
is your next special.
Stay tuned for that story on the next special. I don't know how I met your beef. But I was at a Chili's with a girl that I was dating.
Okay.
And my aunt was there with her daughter. And they walked past my table like, hey, Dodge. And I have this ginormous, like, double cheese.
About to just
cheese.
Devour it. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, and just kind of like making small talk, but like looking at me and then looking at the plate. And then the next morning, I went over to visit my mom. We're going to go to lunch. And she's like, sit down on the couch. And it was literally like, I felt like a kid, like a gay kid coming out to his parents. Like they found out. She's like, so where did you go last night with Michelle? Where did you go? I was like, oh, I went to Chili's. Yeah. Did you see anybody there? I was like, yeah. Well, I ran into Auntie. I was just like, yeah. What were you eating? I was like, oh, man.
I love how they slow play it,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and I was like, fuck, okay, I had a cheeseburger.
You couldn't lie, huh?
I had to find out from somebody else that my son eats beef? I'm like, yeah, how long has this been going on without me knowing? Like, and she's literally almost in tears. Like, what?
What's wrong with lamb?
She's like, what's wrong with chicken is what she said. What's wrong with chicken? I make it at home. It's always so good. What if people find out? There's no more marriage proposals will come for you.
What?
Dead serious. Because we're Brahmins. Like, we're the top of the caste.
Yeah.
So we're like the priests. And so imagine, like, the guys who are like, the cow is sacred and it shall not be eaten. And then I'm over here like, huh? Like, just devouring a double bacon cheeseburger.
Dude, there's a has that been touched on in any
I don't know.
Film?
And she passed away a few years ago. But I remember when she was in the hospital, like, randomly. Mm-hmm. I had come in from California, and I was just we're watching TV, and she's like, "Can I ask you a question?" I was like, "Sure." She goes, "Do you still do it?" I was like,
she still
"Smoke
it up."
Yeah. I was like, "Smoke?" And she's like, "No,
worse.
Eat beef." I was like, "Yeah." She goes, "Why?" Like, she was still concerned. Like,
she was in the hospital.
Yeah, she was still concerned about the fact that I eat beef.
Well, that's
you just go, "Hey,
that's
mom."
A sign of a true loving mother.
By the way, a couple weeks ago, I got really drunk with my male friend, and we blew each other.
She wouldn't care.
Let's talk about the beef.
Yeah, that's exactly what she's like.
Was there beef on his cock?
Did you have steak after or before? Like, yeah, like she would like that. Like, that is like it's that stuff is like it was crazy to me. I'm like, we're in America. Like, you know, she and it was funny because when we were kids
in Texas, by the way.
Right. Which is, I mean, I remember when we first moved to Mesquite, there was a like it was hilarious. I'm writing all this stuff down for either a sitcom or a new special.
Good.
But our neighbors three doors down, Gail.
Great band.
Gail and Gary. Yeah, Gail and Gary brought a pie.
Okay.
And it was my dad. My mom was at work, and my dad was there, and they were like, well, welcome to the neighborhood. Like, mm-hmm. It was like a real, like a legitimate thing. Like, it was like, yeah. a cake or something.
Sure.
And my dad's sitting there, and he's been waiting for my mom to get home because he thought that he had to give them something back, and he felt bad.
Right.
So my mom made chicken curry and took it over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like you don't have to do that. They're welcoming you to the neighborhood,
right?
Like,
but
and
I'm
she
sure
made
that
like,
was like incredibly like well. I mean,
yeah, but
like,
I mean, this
oh,
is like
wow.
fire engine hot chicken curry to you know guys who have never had Indian food or ever seen Indians. It's like 1981. I've never seen Indians. And it's like, that's what they, like, they gave us something sweet. We set their ass on fire. Yeah. It's basically what
we did. Maybe that's almost like a jab. Like, oh, really?
We
see your pie and raise you a curry.
Let's just say Gail and Gary didn't talk to them for a couple months.
Best of moment number 35. Everybody loves this guy. One of the stars of Undateable. You've seen him on Conan, At Midnight, and The Kroll Show. It's Ron Funches.
You know, if you do four new bits that just all kind of do okay, they're going to be like, yeah, I mean, yeah, you got good presence, man.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely not like trying to be like, oh, I need to go out there and do a whole new 20 today.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, I know that's ridiculous.
Totally.
But, you know, I understand like, oh, I have this window now between when we taped it and when it comes out that I need to at least have 10 minutes. Like,
yeah, totally. Yeah, that's a good bar to set for yourself because when it comes out, then it's like more people are going to be on the Ron Funches fucking party train and gonna want to come see you, and
that would be another great show for Ron to be on, the Ron Funches party train.
Dude, we're coming up. We've already, what was the first one?
Munch and Funch.
Yeah, Munch and
cereal.
Funches
is the cereal.
Yeah.
Well,
the doll.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole division at work.
Yeah. Now, and you said you try to wake up and write in the morning. Do you write, like, do you shut off the world? Are you looking on the internet, or are you looking for inspiration?
Basically, I put on some instrumentals, whether they be like classic music or like some MF Doom, some jazz, anything that I can find that has kind of like this offbeat pattern that kind of mimics what I try to do.
That's crazy.
Okay,
I'll put that on in the background, and then I kind of just open up the words docs and have magnetic boards up so I can just write down ideas. So these are usually just like if I like at 2 a.m. if I just get an idea or something.
Are you one of those guys who, like, if you have an idea in the middle of the night, you got to wake up and write down?
Yeah.
Either like, but sometimes it's like if you write down even a phrase, that's not enough. You have to like write down the whole, at least in that moment, right? Of like what you're kind of thinking.
Yeah, if it's late at night, like, but that's when like it's great to have a girlfriend or something
to bounce off of, right?
Or even just be like, hey, write this down.
Secretary.
Right.
Write this down.
You wake up. I woke up. You woke up. Write this down. Yeah, even if you don't get it.
Yeah. You know what I love?
Write it down.
You know what I love too about your style, man, is like it's so tough as a comic to get comfortable with silence and pauses. You know, like that's one thing that I really like. I had to consciously make an effort to get better at in the last like 3 years, because, you know, I think at least for me, when I started off, I talked too fast, and I would just try to hurry up and get to that punchline that I thought was going to get the laughs.
Yeah.
You know, and having the trust in yourself to like work a moment and massage a joke a little bit and let people like listen. And you do that brilliantly, man.
Thank you. I think it comes kind of from this like asshole perspective of like a lot of times, it becomes where like, oh, I don't care about this punchline that's going to make you laugh. It's like, I want to manipulate you.
Yeah.
So part of that is going to be the silence. Part of this is going to be this false punchline that you think is the punchline. And then there's going to be a real punchline. And then, ha-ha, the joke was on you all along.
You love misdirection, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. I love misdirection in my comedy. Definitely a couple of jokes. I mean, there's like this joke that starts off where it could be... I have a couple of jokes start off where they could be racial, and then they're not.
The one on Conan.
Yeah.
So good. Do you even have that
your opener
clip, Brad? You got to even pull that up?
Yeah. First of all, I'll ask you, because you're a comic, do you mind if we play that?
Not at all.
Okay,
I won't
listen,
but play.
That, why is that always weird? Like we hear ourselves do these jokes every night, but when you hear a recording of yourself, it's always weird. Because
you always think you sound cooler than you are. You also think you're funnier than you are.
Well, I'm well aware that I don't sound cool. But I think it's like I go in and you're like, oh, I thought I was a little bit better than that.
Totally, dude. Totally.
lead, man. What a bummer it is to just hear yourself and go, God, I thought it was pretty good, man.
Like, turns out.
What happened between 10 minutes ago and now?
It's okay, but I thought it was a little bit better than that.
Dude, Johnny Depp said on Letterman once, he was like, he's like, Letterman's like, have you seen Finding Neverland? And Johnny's like, no, I don't watch any of my movies, actually. I don't, I've never seen any of them. And he's like, you don't see any of your movies? And he's like, no, I haven't seen. He's like, you ever seen Pirates? He's like, no, I saw some still frames, but no. He's like, it was very good. They made three of them. And Johnny's like, yeah, I know, I was there for them, but I just never watched them.
I totally get that.
I get, yeah.
I think sometimes, like, I watch some Undateable, and then was like, oh, okay, I see why it becomes more like, if I look at it like an athlete, and we're like, oh, game tape, where I'm like,
yes,
I need to go like, oh, yeah. I made a mistake here, or this right. is something I would have done differently.
Do you listen to your sets like that? Do you tape your sets?
Yeah, I tape my sets, and then one month a year, I'm in a mood where I'm listening to all my sets.
Sure.
Every other month, they're just piling up on my phone.
Do you title them and stuff?
No. I just go, I mean, if I, the
Kill set at it. Ice House.
Yeah. But I definitely tape it just in case I go, oh, I heard something new. I need right. to go back and yeah. listen.
You always remember, I think, in the moment. Like, you tape because yeah. you're like, I'm not going to remember. But if something miraculous happens or some great handful of tags or whatever, like, you get off being like, okay, well.
Yeah, that's another weird thing that Ricky does, too, is, like, he'll find a great tag, and then he just abandons it. Like, he doesn't want to keep it.
That's so Andy Kaufman, huh?
Yeah. Here's Ron Funches on Conan O'Brien. Here's the intro joke we're talking about.
Oh! It's good to see you guys again. Oh, hello, Mr. Whiteface.
Yeah, see, they're like, what?
I mean you no harm, so please don't come at me. That's a conversation I had with a kitty cat several days ago.
I love that. I love that.
The other,
oh, okay, sorry.
There's one more little piece to it.
It's also now the slogan for Black History Month.
Yeah. I mean, boom.
Yeah.
Double turn.
Got double it. Turn. Yeah.
Back in the race.
And how many turns would you consider doing in that bit? There's only a couple, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's also, like, how many more of those? It's also this. Right?
We get it. Yeah. Hey, but it's also this.
Best of moment number 36 from Workaholics and the movie Dope. We talk about Nickelodeon GAC in this moment. It's Blake Anderson.
I couldn't watch In Living Color. Like, I loved it. Yeah, my mom was like, it's not happening.
You know, my mom wouldn't let me watch that, or you can't do that on television.
Yeah, like, that was kind
that
of...
That was, like, an edgier... What? The dad was, like, a piece of shit. I think he would hit the woman sometimes.
Nightmare Dad.
Yeah.
I remember him.
Nightmare Dad.
And getting slime. She always told me it was jizz, and I was like...
Well, that's not true.
Well, she's like, it's green jizz. And then I thought I would... And then the first time I came, I was like, it's not green. I went to the doctor. He was like, get the fuck out of here.
Green jizz? What'd they do? Like, blow the Grinch?
Maybe. You can't do that on television, man. That's how they got the name. They're like, what we want to do is a big bucket of cum drops on the kids, and when they pop out of lockers, they're like, you can't do that on television. Like,
that's the show.
Like, that's the name. And what if we make the cum green? And they're like, call it slime, you got a show. Like, that's it.
So yeah, and just some old Jew behind a desk going, it's brilliant, I love it.
It's just the cum thing. I'm not going to get it by Nick.
That's the funniest I've ever heard. And it's such a like an executive thing for them to be like, what if the cum's green? Yeah. Like, that's the one.
Some guy just wants to put his staple on it. Yeah. Like, okay, call me crazy.
Yeah. I'm not against the cum.
Yeah.
But the color of it.
And then all of a sudden, the network fucking forms around slime. So look, who's laughing now?
Who
and then,
knew?
And then 10 years later, Flubber gets made.
Yep.
And there's Gak. Which is basically fucking...
It's more solid.
It's more solid. That's like if you come in a snowstorm.
Yeah.
It comes out gack.
Dude, somebody must have found their buddy frostbitten and fucking still holding their dick. They're like, I'm going to die. I might as well jerk off in the frost. And he goes, dude. They go, I found Jim with some gack stuck to his fucking pants. He goes, what's gack, dude? He goes, frozen jizz.
It's like a solid...
So he goes, wait. What'd you say? Gack? Hold on a second. Boop, boop, boop. Hello, Nickelodeon?
Yeah. And hello. I got another one. You ever heard of when your dick floams?
Oh, floam!
You remember floam?
Oh, I remember floam.
It had like little circles.
Yeah,
in it.
little air bubbles or something.
Yeah, it was weird, man. They really cashed out on all the different types of cum slime.
Why did they ever just have cum slime?
Yeah, they tried.
It was
man.
Too on the nose.
Yeah,
man.
They tried.
Wait, now, okay, so
I just figure a guy in the research and development lab just like drinking different things and then jizzing, going, "Can we do something with that?"
Yeah. Just pissed off. It's the last straw. Yeah, well, why don't you do something with this? Wait a minute.
Gary.
That's it.
I know you're angry, but stop it. And he goes, what? And then the slow zoom towards his face.
It's Flome.
And that was the day Gak was made.
Yep.
Best of moment number 37. Also, one of the stars of Workaholics. And he's working on a new Showtime show that Jim Carrey is producing. You've seen him all over TV. His hour special comes out this spring. It's Eric Griffin. A video of the retarded YMCA girls.
Right.
This says more about the leagues you were playing in than it does about your skills.
Fuck that shit.
Oh, yeah? Really?
Seattle,
Remember when Mario Lemieux came back into the NHL at like 45 or whatever it was?
Right.
It didn't say anything about him. It just said how garbage the NHL was at the time.
Let me tell you something, Eric.
Oh, here we go.
By the way, the fact that whatever race you are just dropped hockey knowledge, I'm impressed.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, what are you, by the way?
That's not talking. Does it matter?
Yes. Everyone who sits down at this podcast, we say, what are you?
So people listening can be like, well, he can't say that.
Hey, Michael Yo, we had
what
on.
Am I, took what us am t- I, Riley now from the fucking...
It took us 20 minutes to figure out if Michael Yo was black or Asian.
Yeah. Turns out both.
God. Turns out both.
And hacky. No, I'm kidding. Stop it. Oh.
Here we go.
It's a joke. Come on.
For those who don't know who Eric Griffin is, Eric Griffin Montez.
Please edit that out.
Montez from Workaholics, insanely popular show.
Wait, have we started the podcast?
Oh yeah, we've been going for the last like 15 minutes.
I thought this was
minutes.
All sound check.
No.
You know, dude, we usually do start it like with it, but I feel like it's too slow that way. Yeah. Like we just start talking like that, and I just hit record.
We'll get back to your quick fat another time.
Eric, all I want to say is championship game. We played an all black team. Had never played an all black team.
Right. This sounds like the plot of Coach Carter.
Yeah.
One man could bring white Seattle kids who had quick fat.
Oh, dude.
To go.
Quick Fat is actually the name of the movie.
A great title. Yeah, of course. Yeah. See, now you're on board.
Because you can get like a bunch of sequels. Quick Fat 7. Wait, Retaliation.
No, but what's Quick Fat 2 called? Quick Fat 2 and then what's in parentheses?
No, it'd be Quick Fat 2.
Quick Fat 2.
Back in the saddle.
It's Quick Fat 2, Chunky Boogaloo. Yeah.
There you go.
That sounds like something you pay a dwarf to do to you in Vegas.
the Chunky Boogaloo?
Hey, he's right here.
Hey, Dennis Hoff at the Bunny Ranch, I'll take two of your finest whores. And
How much for the Chunky Boogaloo?
Well,
glad you asked, Bradley.
Let me tell you.
Wait, no. So I score like 27 points. No joke. Okay. Hitting threes, banking fucking turnaround jumpers. That's the video I have of. As I'm running down court, and I've said this on the podcast before, one of the dads on the all-black team goes, "Man, that fat motherfucker's killing us." If that's not a compliment, Eric Griffin.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
For some reason, when a black guy calls you motherfucker, it's like, all right, I earned that shit.
Also, I knew what he was saying. He was like, yeah, dude, he's banking in threes.
You know what? Those are great. You know, I have a moment like that, too. I remember when I was in high school, it was tough for me in high school because like everybody was always getting on me.
Were you a funny kid in high school?
Yeah, I was a funny kid.
So you're funny from the get-go.
Gangly, you know. Mm-hmm. I was like way skinnier.
What would you do to make people laugh?
I just me, you know what I mean? Yeah. Just like I was saying, when I was coaching, I the kids hated me because like the things I would say on the sideline, but the crowd would be laughing and I never noticed.
You were so animated,
you know?
Dude.
But I was
like, that fat motherfucker's killing us.
But I would say things like, "Are you guys point shaving?" You know, like
to 7 year olds, dude. Junior high kids. What junior high mafia is going on that you guys are giving points?
You should. Yo, oh, that's hilarious. How bad do you want to play a basketball coach in a movie or TV?
Oh, it would be great. It would be awesome.
Yo, hilarious because you were being serious, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was being serious.
Would you get angry at the parents for laughing at you?
No, I wouldn't even notice. I zoned everything out. It would just be me and the kids, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's just like I didn't know how, like, I'm a real animated person anyway, so it's like I know I can get into that rhythm of, like,
you've got one of those
coach, like Pacino rhythms in that, Any Given Sunday. I've given speeches like that,
inch
you know, to
by
my
inch.
Kids, you know? I'd be like,
Life is a game of inches.
Like, if they were, like, fucking around in a half, I would come into the locker room, but I'd be like, if they score 10 points, it would be
children.
Like, if they score 10 points, you're going to be running your ass mouth is off. You know, it just.
By the way, you can't see, but Eric Griffin has no doubt the most expressive face comedy. Yeah. It's unreal, dude.
Yeah, I'm very expressive. So
yeah, but it's unreal. But you, like, you keep it contained, though. Man.
But with comedy and then like, but just in life, it's like there. Remember, I said I refuse to coach girls basketball ever again because it's a contact sport. Yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah. Those chicks are like grabbing tits and like elbows
then,
and everything.
After the game, they're in a line shaking hands, you know. And my girls are slapping their hands like, and they're going like this: bitch, 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 bitch. So I was like, okay, I'm done. Bitch. I was like, I'm done. You guys get over here. I had to get on them. And I remember like volleyball. Oh God, it was the championship game of the league. And then this girl, oh God, she's actually became a porn star, by the way. Her name
isn't that great when you find that out? Yeah, here's a girl I went to eighth grade with. Well, no, biggest boobs on the planet.
No,
porn
star
now.
The coach, and her name was Francine. Her porn name is actually Francine D.
I know her.
I used to coach her.
Are you serious?
Oh, no shit.
What?
Yeah.
I don't know her, but I know of her.
You've masturbated her.
Exactly.
Side story is I was in a bar in downtown with some buddies. This is years ago. And we're just chilling and chilling. And then we see some girls walk in and they're all tits. And we're just looking at them like, damn. And then one of the girls goes, Coach Eric? And I was like, oh, shit. And everybody was looking at me like, Coach, huh?
Oh, they didn't know your history.
I'm like, no, she didn't. Look like those titties aren't. She just put those in. It was like,
how much practice did you have with those titties?
But
coach?
That particular girl, she like, so it's the volleyball. You know, I'm yelling at them. I'm trying to get them to play. And then like, it was. I remember, it's like they did something they're not supposed to do. It's like you're not supposed to like when the ball in volleyball. If the ball's coming at you, you go for it. Your teammate calls if it's going to be out or not.
Yeah.
Like, you don't turn and say out, but you let someone else do that.
Yep.
Well, for the point game, she says out, and it bounces right in bounds, and then I'm about to explode, and I look on the court, and all of the girls were crying. Right. And it was just one of those moments where I was like,
dude, yeah, you could. Yeah.
In my mind, I was like, you bitches better cry. But
dude, again,
out,
you're playing the part of coach, and
not just that, you're a mentor,
you're a
friend.
Human being,
yeah. So it was like,
because guess what, that they feel bad. That's what you could sense.
Yeah, they remember this stuff. You know, the funny thing of that's her.
There's Francine D.
Coached her in volleyball.
Yeah, the funny thing and basketball and all that shit. The funny thing about like you know.
What about
how
your coaching styling drove her to porn, by the way? Let's get to the bottom of that.
I always say it's my fault.
Hey, you know what? When you said, really? Hey, get that rebound, you dirty slut. She took that to heart, man.
But this funny thing is I remember
you. No one digs balls like you, Francine.
Okay, here we go. Wow, maybe I think I should.
Digging balls, huh?
Okay. Do you have a few more? Do you want to?
Hey, man. He can probably go.
Should I wait?
Yeah. we'll wait. We'll bring one back. Brad, can you get one more in?
Best of moment number 38. One of the biggest comics in the country and one of the stars of one of the biggest sitcoms in the country. You know him. You love him. He's the other half of Mike and Molly on CBS. It's Billy Gardell.
I had a 1984 Delta 88 Brome. And that was my favorite. That was my favorite car to this day.
I might need exhibit from Pimp My Ride to definitely explain what that is.
It's a gigantic land yacht Oldsmobile. Four door. You could just put a crew of six guys in this thing.
That's awesome.
And for being a road comic, that's exactly what you need because you have your life in that car.
You got everything in the car. Yeah, man. We'd have our radios and a hot plate and clothes and CDs when you had to carry your music physically.
Oh yeah,
for those days.
God, I know. Remember Sam Goody?
Yes, I do. And I had to get. I was a big fan of Sam Goody.
Rest in peace.
We had our atlases folded. Every road comic had their atlases folded under the.
Wow, no GPS. You had to just fucking figure it out,
man. And sometimes those roads didn't coordinate. Nobody came on and went, road closed up ahead. You just got halfway down and went, fuck. Yeah.
Banana peel up on the next turn.
You're like, I only have enough gas for, oh, shit.
Would you miss gigs because of some...
I missed two gigs in 25 years.
That's incredible.
Both of them was because I was drinking with a buddy. But twice in 25 years, that was it.
Wow. Yeah, you were... Like, you were the definition of a road comic.
I was a road beast, for a long time.
Yeah, like,
lame.
I'm
it
sure
took a lot of work to get very lame, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, hey, enjoy that, exactly. Like, I'm sure when Mike and Molly finally hits for you, did you ever have a moment where someone was like, Billy Gardell, overnight success, and you wanted to just choke the life out of him?
You can't get mad at people. They don't know, but it is funny. They'll say, it just happened, huh? Just happened for you.
So crazy.
25 years of fighting off the fear of taking care of family, getting rid of booze, trying not to kill myself at a one-nighter. Yep. Just walked into the improv and signed up.
and signed up for TV.
And just as a perk, they put me next to the biggest movie star in the last 20 years. Just because I asked.
Yeah. You don't ask, you don't get.
It's not worth explaining. You just go, yep.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what happened.
That's exactly how it is. They wave a wand over you down at the improv.
Yeah.
It's like a thetan meter from the Dianetics people. But it's
Scientology.
It's like a fame meter. They go, yeah, okay, you're ready. Yeah.
I mean, we love Scientology and completely support anything and everything they do.
Right. We don't want to get killed, right? Okay.
Please don't sue us. So the road for how many years?
I did the road from, I started in 1987. December 28th, 1987 was my first open mic. Got out on the road around 1990 and then was up in New York from 90 to about 93. Got my ass handed to me.
Really?
Sent back to Florida. Did a lot of Florida Southeast gigs, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, Atlanta, Louisiana, Alabama. Then moved from Florida to Atlanta, then from Atlanta out to Chicago, then from Chicago out to here. Landed in L.A. about 97.
Wow. Holy God,
then did another 10.
Yeah.
And then finally got a break.
Now, when you say you did your, you got your ass handed to you, what about your act in New York?
Oh, I'm assuming it was. Yeah, I just wasn't ready. And I thought I was super funny, but I was, let's see, 21.
Yeah, like
going
you don't.
To Manhattan, like I know something.
And this is the early 90s when New York was comedy was booming,
Oh, absolutely. I caught the tail end of the peak.
Mm-hmm.
I caught the tail end of the peak where the greatest education, I think, other than getting on stage a lot, because that was the other gift. Every city had two clubs. Every club had an open mic night where they were nurturing guys
so
could get to be good comics. And at that week, whatever club you were at, always had a great headliner, like a guy who really knew how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, Dom Irrera, Hicks, Kenny Rogerson. You know, you'd even see Kinison back in those days.
Oh, shit.
Dice would do the clubs. And all these guys were great at what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could watch these guys and go, wow, that's how you do that. And so the education of watching these cats was what was invaluable. Just absolutely.
It's just as important as getting up and doing it. I
think
feel
so.
Like.
Watching good comics is important.
Right. I mean, you look at every, I mean, you know, I always compare comedy and sports, but it's like, I mean, these guys like Jordan, like Bird, they watch the guy. I mean, and
you know. you learn your voice from watching these guys.
Totally. Because you figure out what you like.
You go, I like the way that cadence works. Now, what would be my version of that?
Totally.
How do I say what I want to say?
Yeah.
And that's a long journey.
Go ahead. Yeah. Was there any specific thing that you could think of, or either a comic or a line or cadence that you saw?
I borrowed a lot from never material, just personality.
Sure.
You're learning to be. And I love when you meet comics and they're like, I've never had any influence anywhere. Okay. Well, just throw away all your music and your movies to you, dick. No, my influences early were Tom Rhodes.
Nice.
Who was a great comedian.
Another road dog.
Road animal, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, and his gigs would always blow our gigs away, you know.
Like, well, sure.
Like
and
you'd be going like, I'm going to Alabama. And Tom would be like, yeah, brother, I'm going to Paris.
He's international.
All right. But him, and then I drifted away from him, and I tried to be like Bill Hicks for about a year.
I think a lot of comics did. And
just too much for me, man. I couldn't fill their shoes, couldn't hold that anger. I wasn't that angry.
Right, and the thing is with Hicks is that if you try to be him and you're not that smart...
You got to be smart. Yeah,
it's going to come off horrible.
You sound like a lunatic.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
You sound like an angry lunatic.
I mean, he was poetic.
Exactly.
Right, and he would go for such long periods of time without getting a laugh, but knowing that he had that line coming.
And it was coming,
right.
Exactly. And then I got away from him, and Ben Creed was a huge influence in helping me find my own voice.
Wow. Okay.
And that guy really learned. He said, "You got to, you know." He said, "There's all, you know, it's the same premises.
Yeah,
we all have to talk about the same stuff." And he said, "You know, you got to find your way of what you have to ask yourself. What do you feel about these things? And then how do you make that funny? And how do you report that back to your audience?" And he really, really helped me with that. And then there was an old comic named Jimmy Cook who taught me mic technique, which really helped in my kind of comedy because, like. He taught me when you're going to yell, bring the mic back. And when you're going to whisper, get up on the mic.
There's another thing nobody teaches you. There's no comedy school.
Again, nobody's teaching that anymore. There used to be guys that would help you out with that. And then Creed taught me something incredibly valuable about uniting the audience. said, you got to learn to work. You sound like Tom Waits. You got to learn to work the pockets. And what he meant was you'd come out and divide the audience into three sections, a middle section, left section, right section. Mm-hmm. So you come out and you do your setup to the middle and your punchline to the middle. Then you do your setup to the middle, you do your punchline to the left. Then you do your setup to the middle, you do your punchline to the right. And as you feel the pockets warm up and connect, you can tell where the audience isn't together. And that's what gives you that full banging sound of the entire room laughing at
you. Wow.
So it's that focusing of everybody. And then if you felt it drop down a little bit on the right, you go over to the right and you do the next part over there. It wasn't just a manic pace back and forth.
It was,
let's work this room and really unite them into a ball.
Attention distribution is really another thing
really important.
And again, you only figure out from doing to really get a sense of feeling like where those laughs are coming from. And also just playing the room and not ever like... You know, if you don't have, I mean, we all have like some theater background, so it's like you know innately just to kind of have to play to the whole room. But I mean, getting down to the technical parts of like, oh, like maybe hitting the punch, like, you know, turning and just delivering that punchline to that side of the room, like even makes a difference on how hard the joke
it absolutely does. And then when you unite them and you got them all rolling together, that's the difference between an okay set and a holy shit, you crushed it.
Best of moment number 39. Another star from the show Undateable, but the only one who's from across the sea. That's right, baby. It's Britain's own David Finn.
I go to these things every now and then called dwarf conventions, where all little people from around the country and sometimes all over the world go to one hotel, hang out. Most of the time there's a lot of fucking. But
convention.
Yeah, like any convention. Now, every night there's a DJ and a dance. Every night. And when that song kinda got popular, we all would do this thing. The entire dance floor would do this.
My God.
When it was me, my buddy Josh, and Stephen Wild that started this trend. We would start on opposite ends of the dance floor, run towards each other, and when they said "I get knocked down," we would slam into each other, fall over,
brilliant.
And then get back up again, and then back up, and then do it again,
like Weebles.
Yes, like Weebles. Only we actually fell down. So there was one point where this caught on.
Where is video?
And by like night six of the convention, as soon as that song started playing, like everyone on the dance floor cheered, got back to the end of the dance floor, and then like all ran towards each
other. Hundreds of dwarves just
hundreds
ran into
of
each
dwarves, like a scene out of Braveheart.
Just ran into each other. Yeah. They all mashed together. Yeah. An explosion happened, and one unicorn appeared.
Yes, exactly. Kind of like the Large Hadron Collider.
Oh my God!
We had no idea what would happen.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. I didn't realize that song had such a strong significance. It's
the anthem of the dwarves
of the dwarf community.
Yeah. So if dwarves do take over at some point,
yes,
and that's not an impossibility.
Yeah.
As Jaden Smith tweeted.
Yeah.
I have Jaden Smith.
Yeah. By
tweets.
The way, yeah. Can we not forget about that?
I mean, okay. Do you want to hear some Jaden Smith tweets?
I mean. Are we friends?
All right. These are some good ones. How can mirrors be real if our eyes aren't real?
God.
Hang on. How can mirrors be
real? Yeah. Hold on a second. Let's dissect these. Let's not just like read these and have them be forgotten messages.
Can you dissect Jaden Smith Twitter?
So
can you dissect a Picasso?
Wait.
Same thing.
So mirrors can't be real if our eyes,
because he's saying our eyes aren't real. So mirrors aren't real.
Is that basically if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there?
Yeah,
to hear
it's something
it?
In the same.
Some
boat.
Weird thing. Okay, here's
he's like
here's,
if you were born with no legs, can you not be a great runner because you choose to not be?
Wait,
well, because God said so. Like,
are right, you man. Reading the same website I'm reading? Because that's the next tweet. No, here's one. If newborn babies could speak, they would be the most intelligent beings on planet Earth.
Sweet guy. And they would say,
bye, Karate Kid on DVD.
What a piece of shit.
Holy shit. Fuck that guy. Yo, remember when I said, fuck man. Yo, kid?
Fuck him.
Yeah, dude.
Actually, yeah. Actually, yeah.
Most trees.
Oh, no.
There we go.
Are blue.
Is that what he
That's
said?
The end of the tweet. That's it.
Are you fucking with us?
Most
right
trees
now?
Are blue.
Has he got any hashtags on there or anything?
Yeah. Hashtag sorry, not sorry. Hashtag psych trees are green.
Okay.
Hashtag obviously. Hashtag my dad's the man.
Here's kind of one of those if a tree falls in a forest tweets. If a bookstore never runs out of a certain book, does that mean that nobody reads it or everybody reads it?
Jesus Christ.
What the fuck, man?
You can discover everything you need to know about everything by looking at your hands.
What?
Don't stop reading these, man.
Okay. The Great Gatsby is one of the greatest movies of all time, period. Coachella, period.
That's... I like
yeah,
that.
That might be the
that's
best
pretty
one.
Funny.
Yeah,
that's the same tweet.
Yeah. Of course it is, because that's basically him letting you know where he thought of that.
Yes.
Yeah. And then you just put two and two together of why he thought of that.
Sure.
That's pretty funny.
There is no nutrients in our food anymore, or in our soil, or in our water.
What if it was like in our hearts or our souls? Jesus.
A.
Well, Jesus, you know, he's making bold statements, and I guess that's what Twitter's for. Say something, right?
Yeah.
Anything you
My
see.
My eyes are real, man. Fuck that kid.
Best of moment number 40 from the amazing podcast, The Crab Feast. You've seen him on Comedy Central and one of the best comics in the game. It's the one and only Ryan Sickler.
When I first came to your apartment and did the Crab Feast for the first time.
Fuck Crab Feast, 5 stars.
Thank you.
No problem.
That's a great pitch.
Mm-hmm.
What happened with the toilet? This was
the second time. That's right.
Second time. And this is why Rye thought that we prolonged the booking process on getting him on the About Last Night podcast.
So there was about 5 different reschedules and some cancellations.
Yeah, sure.
And we all have schedules, and you know, sure. I'm very easy about it. Like I said, we're not saving lives on these tables.
Mm-hmm.
But we are. Giving credit to fucking phone book rippers.
Yeah,
across the country, across the world.
Yeah,
an Italian. Fuck, all right,
Italian guy.
So what happened when I came over?
So Adam came over, and we all actually. I don't know. I don't think Jay partook, but you and I certainly did, and you got super super fun, and we told a bunch of stories. And one of the things we talked about was calling people out on stuff. So he after the podcast, he disappears in the bathroom, and he's going. I wasn't thinking about it, but he was only gone for like. You know, a minute.
And
he comes out, but he's like, I got to get out of here. I got to go. And I'm like, all right, man, we'll see you
later. And wait, Jay had, right?
Well, I didn't know yet. Okay, so I go in to take a piss, and there is shit like all over the toilet seat. I'm like, what the fuck? So I go, I'm like, Adam, wait a minute. I'm not cleaning that up. You fucking take this and clean it up. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you're just shit in there, and there's shit all over the fucking seat.
And by the way, I'm at the point of high to where, like, you're super cautious of every move you're making.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, all right, don't exit weird. Like, I'm thinking about my exit. Like, don't say something weird. Don't hug him too many times before you leave. Like, don't say anything weird. Don't say, like, any fucking douchey, like, I'll see you on the flip side. Like, don't, you know. I was really aware of, like, how I was going
to
leave this apartment.
Okay.
So now I'm getting called out for something I didn't do.
He did not do. And I'm like, dude, what the fuck? You just took a power shit in there and you didn't look.
I was in there for fucking 45 seconds.
He's like, it wasn't me. And I'm like, yeah, who else? Nobody else was in there. I'm not touching that fucking shit. You clean it up. And then Jay's like, I think it was me. And I'm like, I'm so sorry.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I felt so terrible. My heart was racing.
And
then I fucking see him in San Diego and we have another smoke session. I'm like, I just want you to know I'm humiliated by that.
Yeah.
I really felt terrible that I falsely accused you of shitting on my
You felt so bad.
I felt terrible.
Dude, because you knew you had to call me out. Like, that was a fucking, that could have been a turning point in the friendship.
No,
absolutely.
It never would have been a turning
point. No, but like, what if
it hasn't been for me and Larson? His fucking pig ass had to go in there and fucking.
You're right.
I just didn't want to clean another human being.
But also, what was going through your head when you were like, oh God, like.
I was like, I thought you went in there and just, you like had a quick power diarrhea and didn't check back.
Because I didn't walk out and go, all right, I'm out of here.
Yeah, you were hustling
so
out
everything
of there.
Lined up as far as the shit,
like,
the speed in which I was trying to exit.
It was definitely fresh-ish. And I was like, I am not fucking cleaning another grown man's shit
off
my
toilet. Well, my question
toilet.
Is, how the fuck did Adam not notice? What did you do in there?
Oh, yeah, did you sit and piss?
Guys, I got a confession to make.
You and Jay Larson now have a very special relationship.
When I smoke pot, it's more comfortable to sit and pee.
No, okay,
no, no,
that's
dude,
the confession.
No, no, no. Oh, what'd you think?
I thought you were going to be like, I shit all over
the place. Oh, it was me. Oh, God, no. God, I wish. God, I should have said that.
I did too. Dude.
No,
I
didn't see it. I didn't. No, man. I think I just don't. Sometimes you just trust that you have dick control and you fucking flip the seat and you're just fucking, you're in your own world. I wasn't like, you know.
You're good.
I'll watch where my shit's going if I'm like at a sporting event and I'm like, you know. You know, in the aisles, and I'm making sure I'm peeing on the kids' fries, like all of them. Yeah, you know, yeah. No, if I'm in the urinal, obviously, yeah. I just want to see if you guys stuck with me, but but no, you know, it's so I just don't think I was even paying attention.
Oh, dude, I was
I felt awful. I apologize. Well, I thought this was backlash for that.
It's not. It's not. You are always a friend of the show, Ryan Sittler.
Thanks, guys.
Speaking of urinals, I have a fucking urinal story. Because
I would love to hear this.
Yeah, because I'm flying back. And then I'm in the Dallas airport, and I go to the bathroom, gotta take a piss. And all the urinals are open, except one is taken. Guess which one urinal is taken?
The smallest one.
The fucking disabled urinal.
Wait, the small one's considered the disabled urinal?
Yeah, or the kid urinal.
The kid urinal. Urinal.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't like it, the kid urinal, because for some odd reason...
The one with the phone book.
The one with the stepping stools up to it. And it's always awkward because, like, normally if a kid's ever taken that urinal, his pants are just down.
Right. All the way to the ground.
There's no fly action with
good
those
to know,
kids.
Good to know. You know, good to know that some kids are still just dropping trowel the entire way.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that kid in elementary school that was just like, fuck it, everyone's just seeing my ass while I fucking do this right now.
I have a friend of mine that just recently, a couple years ago, he got wasted at a Ravens game, and at halftime you go in, and it's like 10 deep in each urinal, and he's a big dude. He's like over 300.
He just dropped
them all the way down.
What are you going to do, man?
Everyone started laughing.
Guess what? Part of you goes, what the fuck? But part of you, hey, man. Some of those kids who did it in elementary school were a little off. So maybe that's yeah, it. He just
got
never
kids and shit. He's just like, I don't care. He just dropped them. And I'm behind him like one over, dying laughing.
Because you don't
like,
want to be the guy to tell him to pick him up either. Because he's turning towards you at that point.
And he's a big dude. Wait, so did he do that when he was still in line or when he got to
no,
the
No, when he got to the urinal, he undid his pants and just let them all drop.
In line, dropped them.
All
goes,
the way
just drop. Give me a little preview
and
before the
bam,
show.
Yeah.
You're not going to say anything.
Slid up like that, shuffled up.
Good for him. I'm going to try that one time.
So what did you do? Did you call the guy out?
Oh, I totally did. I'm like, hey, so none of the others are working? And he looked back like I just caught him like because like this scenario never entered his head.
Right, yeah.
Like he's like, hey, the little tiny urinal, I'm gonna be funny, and like maybe he thought a kid would walk up. He never in a million years thought the exact adult this urinal was designed for would walk up at that moment during those 12 seconds or whatever of pissing.
Right. Dude, he looked at you like you caught him trying to slip out on half price on a Dom Pepino, huh? He was just like, yo, motherfucker, you did not pay the full 60.
You're like, yo, man, did you shit on my toilet seat?
So he's just but like he got so nervous when he actually saw me, he did the one step over,
just hopped,
kept pissing midstream.
Oh shit!
He kept going, so he paints the wall. He paints the wall like some sort of pedophile tagger.
Oh my god!
Like just he just goes across the side, and I'm going like, yeah. Well, now the wall at my nose level smells like your piss. I'm not gonna do that. People don't realize that, man. So what I'm trying to say is if the disabled urinal is free, but other urinals are free, take the other ones. I need that one.
I have to be honest here. I'm gonna share some more of my ignorance. I didn't realize that the short one was. I thought that was I never considered it to be for small people. I always considered it to be a kid's urinal.
Yeah.
Always.
You know what? It might be
that's
a kid's.
My short sight. No,
but
you're right.
It might be a kid's urinal.
How can you be wrong?
I mean, you're right. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're right. I use it, so in my opinion, it's a disabled urinal.
Yeah.
That's what it's designed for.
Best of moment number 41. You've seen him on NBC's Whitney and Truth Be Told, and he's just a straight-up hilarious dude. Give it up right now. Best of moment number 41 for Tone Bell.
To kind of backtrack a little bit, Adam played Wolverine, and I read somewhere, and I just want to know if this is true. I read somewhere
you were Storm,
that you,
and not because
you're black, but But I read somewhere that you were the mascot at your college.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
That's true.
Wow.
I was a mascot. Holy yeah. shit.
Was it at Bayside High School? Were you the Tiger?
I was the Tiger.
What?
But it was not Bayside High School. I was Savannah State Tiger.
You're an actual Tiger.
I was an actual Tiger. Yeah.
No
sure.
shit.
Yep. Now that's
like the full suit.
That is pretty ironic.
Wow.
It really is.
That is pretty ironic, yeah.
Now, did you already always have aspirations to be a mascot? Or
no,
was it like...
so I did it in high school when I stopped playing ball. And
football or basketball?
Basketball.
Of
we
course.
Didn't have a football team.
Now, I just needed to clarify. I knew what you meant because basketball is my main sport, and yeah. I've played with a lot of cool people and black dudes who say ball
yeah.
because a lot of white dudes say ball. They go mm-hmm. basketball.
Well,
and that might sound
Florida,
racist, but that's a very distinct...
If you're like from Tennessee, Florida, Alabama, when
yep.
you say ball, it means
yep.
football.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, Georgia... North Carolina. Like
now, I say hoop a lot. Is that a white thing?
No, I say hoop.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ball is cooler.
But do you say play hoop or just hoop?
Hoop.
Hoop, yeah.
Like, oh, you want to hoop on Saturday?
Yeah.
Hoop
yeah.
is a verb. Okay.
You want to play ball? Yeah. but if you were to ask me...
I had to do, like, the white thing and, like, come right. in. I believe he's using that as a verb.
Brad is the white old man moderator of
yeah,
the racist
just as long
lingo.
As you don't... you could use hoop as a verb as long as you don't end it with a participle.
Yeah. Yo, you are the Chuck Woolery of racist lingo.
And we'll be back in 2 and 2.
Hoop is a verb. I want that audio.
Now when you're the mascot, so does anyone fuck with you or something?
No. It was so the high school one, like there wasn't a real, like we were the Warriors in high school and they didn't have like a real mascot. So mm-hmm. they just went. Because I was a mascot so I could travel with the girls' basketball team.
Brilliant.
That's no bullshit.
I'm just
brilliant.
Yeah.
Give it up for
so
well done.
But yeah. you know that while we're on this bus, it ain't going yeah. to stay on this bus.
There was no real costume, so they just made this shit up. It was like feet and a head, and they were like, "Can you put on a jumpsuit?" It was like a tracksuit. Remember the nylon tracksuit?
Oh
it was
yes.
Like, it was not a real. I could dunk, though. I could dunk.
Holy shit.
I could dunk. 5'10", son. I could dunk.
God damn. What is that like, man? Because I could dunk on the 7, 8, and 9-foot hoops.
It felt good. Dunk in a game once, I think, almost twice.
Fuck.
But
you'll never forget that, by the way.
No. It was off the backboard, and I just one hand came up.
I got dunked on in a high school basketball game, and I'll never forget that. So I can't imagine what it's like to be on the guy who's delivering.
And I'll never forget the first time my dad brought home that little Tykes hoop.
What was it like dunking a Fisher Price?
When
that's,
I was
2 weeks ago.
When I was 18 years old was the first time I dunked.
You know what I just felt? I just felt for the first time how old white guys feel when they realize, like, damn, that might have felt racist. Like, I was talking about dunking. And you're like, I don't know what that's like. And I'm like,
you're like, oh, right, there's a dwarf here who has absolutely never dunked in his life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He hasn't even dunked Dunkaroos.
I tried to dunk my Oreos, but then fucking Dikembe Mutombo just comes out of nowhere.
They just crumble. You leave them in there a little too long, and now you just got cream in the middle.
A handful of cream.
I rented that movie last night. Handful of cream? Solo scene.
You're living that movie.
Yeah.
Solo scene.
It's a solo scene, but whatever.
Well, there you have it, guys. The end of Volume 2, Best of ALN. Again, putting this together, so funny. So many great moments. And to think that we've got a Volume 3 still yet ahead of us. We have that many hilarious excerpts from episodes over the past year. So we will be releasing a Volume 3. Hope you enjoyed that one so much. And again, thank you guys so much. This has been an unbelievable 2015. Brad and I can't thank you enough. Thanks for subscribing and coming to the shows and tweeting at us and emailing us and just supporting what we do, because we love it, and the only reason we do it is for you guys. So, you know, because I don't like hanging out with Brad that much. So thank you so much. And you know what? Make your New Year's resolution passing on the podcast to one person. If you can tell one person that doesn't know about the About Last Night podcast, that would be amazing. And what a cool thing to do, because people love when they get turned on to stuff. Well, just getting turned on in general. But people love getting introduced to new shit and becoming a fan of it when it's still kind of in the grassroots stages. And, yeah, we've been featured on iTunes twice. Yeah. Do we get a lot of downloads? That's not what we're talking about. Do we have big-time guests? Sure, maybe.
Do we do the podcast out of my apartment? Yeah. Did Bob Saget come there? Yeah, he did. Did he make fun of my grandpa's chair and say it looked like somebody came on it? Sure. We can't do this podcast without the support of you guys and hearing how much you guys love it. So don't stop that. And we won't stop bringing you amazing shows. Like I said, January is going to be a big one, and February. So with that being said, I love you. Shabbat shalom. Good night. And, life your life. Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.